And hello, folks. Again, this is Travis with another segment coming to you right out of the Super Talk Studio Morning Buzz issue. I have here this morning, folks, a very unique guest. Delighted to have her in. Her name is Carrie McQuiston, Baker City Mayor. And she's here. Good morning, Carrie. How are you this morning?
Oh, good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me here.
Well, we're delighted to have you in studio. And for some listeners that weren't aware, you've made some attention. You've made some waves and you got some visibility here in the Eastern Oregon area nationally as well. So this is kind of unprecedented to have a Baker City mayor get on the radar and draw national attention. And it had you on Fox News.
Yes, I was on
most recently
Fox News Primetime. They replayed part of it on Fox and Friends, and then on Varney and Company the next day. So
wow, yeah. I watched both interviews, and I was very interested in your comments, and I personally was delighted to see the stand that you took.
Oh,
so
thank you.
You know, everybody has their opinions and so forth. We're mm-hmm. entitled to them. And so I'm just glad to have you here in studio this morning. I know you've got a lot on your platter, and you've probably been pulled in a variety of directions.
This is very true.
Yeah. And you currently have your own issues in front of you with, you know, handling mm-hmm. your day-to-day stuff and then the city topics and matters at hand. And now you've got people who want to have a conversation with you.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming in this morning for a conversation on Super Talk. So just to start out, you know, what compelled you? What was the tipping point that compelled this response? And for folks who aren't familiar with the background, do you want to give us a little background and then kind of give me what was the tipping point to come forward with the declaration that you made and so on and so forth?
Okay. Well, basically in a nutshell, we declared a crisis, not because of the COVID virus, but because of the governor's response to it. It was an economic, mental health, and crime crisis. And that was a resolution that we passed on March 23rd. And that really did come out from the community.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. I could go back to, during my campaign at the end of the year before, and then the months between that and the time I was sworn in. I mean, our businesses clear back then were at a tipping point then. They just didn't have a voice at that point. They didn't know who to go to or to turn to. They'd been talking at that point even about what they could possibly do to get out from under these mandates as best they could.
Right.
I mean, their businesses were suffering. And back at the end of November, beginning of December, we were going into another extreme shutdown that they couldn't afford. So what happened is that they talked about it. And in January, just after the 12th, when I was sworn in, they brought forth the idea of a common sense sanctuary. And that was just a kind of a rough idea. They wanted to know what we could do with it, what we could legally do, how we would take that and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we put that on the agenda, and we opened up for public testimony.
Okay.
And so we had folks of all kinds, business owners, citizens, come in and talk to us about their ideas on that. We took that, went to a work session, talked about it some more. What came from that work session were two ideas, and the first one was to craft a letter to the governor's office.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
second idea after that was to do something a little firmer in the form of a resolution.
Right.
And we debated back and forth, you know, between proclamations, declarations,
right.
resolutions, ordinances,
okay.
you know, the things that cities do. And it ended up, I drafted the resolution, turned it over to the city manager and recorder.
Okay.
They looked at it, put it into format. Turned it over to the city attorney, and he mm-hmm. had it for a couple weeks.
Okay.
It came back to us again. Again, it was on the agenda to public testimony, and that's mm-hmm. when I think we had the biggest outpouring. We had emails flood in before
wow.
the meeting even started. One of our counselors said that was the most public input she'd ever seen.
Wow.
It was huge.
Just so listeners, as we pause in the middle of this conversation, mm-hmm. we're talking about a resolution that was a culmination of a variety of stakeholders and people who are on the receiving end of the realities
yes.
of these mandates and orders that were creating this undue burden of, you know, incidents on the common people.
Correct.
And they weren't feeling like they were getting their voices heard.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just having to do a lot of bending.
Yeah.
To the point of breaking point.
Exactly. They'd reached the breaking point.
Okay.
I mean, these businesses were telling me, you know, if we continue in these lockdowns, we're going to have to shut our doors.
Right.
And they were pushed right up against the wall. They're in a point where they have to defy these mandates if they want to continue to survive. It's a ridiculous position to be in.
Well, in private sector, as we're all reminded, private sector, we don't have an infinite credit card we can run off of.
No.
You know, we just can't, you know, run off a state budget and get money issued to us and know that the next roll around will be okay. And so there's just, you know, we're on our own out here.
Exactly.
We have to plant and we have to plow and plant and hope for a harvest. And when they disrupt that process through these mandates, it's an undue burden.
Yeah, I think it would be a lot better off if more elected officials had actually worked in private industry.
Right.
So.
Right.
They would understand.
So we've got all these stakeholders in the community.
Correct.
All this input. City attorney. You had the, the city manager, the public input again. Okay, and so we're walking this document through,
right,
through this evolution. Go ahead and continue. And we went to the tipping point and found the edits, and we liked the language, and then what?
Yeah, we just voted it in after we heard. Okay. I mean, the feedback was overwhelming. I mean, our community wanted this passed, and so we did. It was a 5-2 vote.
Okay.
It passed, and when you get to the end of the resolution, that's where, you know, the meat of it really is. I mean, the first part, those are our statements. We're saying, hey, this is what's happening to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the be it resolved section.
Okay.
And the be it resolved section really focused on future changes that we would like to see with the state government. It talked about bringing this out to the media like we're doing, and hopefully spreading this across Oregon so that more cities and counties will pick up this resolution. You know, it makes a collective voice instead of just one city or one county
right.
out there.
Right. Right.
And that's exactly what's happened. The resolution's been a huge success.
And that's what I understand. I saw something, watched the city of Canby do something.
Yes.
I've seen some other entities. Can you want to enlighten us on, you know, in particular, any examples you might want to share?
Yeah, Cove, just down the road, was the first one after us to pick this up, as far as I know.
Okay.
Canby, Klatskanai.
Is anyone reaching out to you to say, hey, I want to have a conversation with you? We're in this city. This is what we're facing.
Mm-hmm.
So is there information sharing and a little collaboration going on?
All over the place. I mean, I have been absolutely overwhelmed with phone calls and messages and emails. It's been cities all over Oregon. And I think there was an assumption from some at the beginning that it would just be limited to Northeast Oregon cities and counties. And that has not been the case. The first people to actually reach out were on the west side of the state.
Okay. So, now, there's a lot of dynamics at play right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, early on, like last year, there was individuals and entities taking a stab at the pushback, and they just weren't able to get any traction.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it seems like what you guys have done over there in Baker City, the stance that you've taken and how you've articulated the language of your declaration, for some reason right now, it's catching on. It's getting traction. What can you attribute to that? Why is that getting traction versus last year, you know, different efforts at pushing back and taking a ground and holding it just weren't, you know, successful. So what can you attribute right now that this dynamic and this particular style, if you will, is catching on?
I think a number of things, actually. I mean, first, we spoke up very forcefully and very truthfully.
Okay.
And that resonates with people. They know when they're hearing the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a strong stance right there. But the other thing that happened is we went into another arbitrary set of lockdowns. And that really was the tipping point for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that happened at that same time is a lot of our elected representatives, you know, our senator, you know, representative, congressman, they all spoke out during that same week when this really hit the media big. Again, at that same time, we had 27 counties in Oregon sign a letter, 80 county commissioners, actually, along with the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a historic letter. I don't think anything like that had gone out to a governor before. And saying the same thing.
What was the essence of that, if you able to share?
It was saying this needs to be turned over to a county level or opened up. It was the same message, just worded in a different way. And honestly, she told them to go pound sand.
Mm-hmm.
And so that puts people in a position where kind of the last option is a groundswell at a grassroots effort to come up through the state. I mean, we are now cities and counties all over the state telling the governor she's hurting us.
Right.
That's huge. It crosses political barriers at that point. It's not Republican or Democrat or anything. It's you're hurting your people.
Right.
That needs to be heard.
And it seems like there's now we've got a you guys did a very bold you made a bold position, a bold statement and maneuver. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me like we've gone from let's go from asking permission to now we're making declarations.
Yeah.
And it seems all along that anybody going to the governor hat in hand and asking for permission, now we're asserting. We're seeing people, agencies and leaders such as yourself, just taking a more of an assertive position and say, okay, I've got people to protect. I've got businesses to protect. Yes. I've got a jurisdiction here, and I'm tired of asking for permission.
Yeah, and we shouldn't be in a position to ask for permission for this.
No.
I mean, we shouldn't be harmed in the first place.
Right.
So, yeah.
Fantastic. Small businesses. What has been kind of the response of those in your community in the aftermath of this, and what kind of feedback are you getting at this point?
The majority are incredibly supportive. I mean, I'm aware of a couple business owners who lean pretty far to the left that, of course, are not happy with this. But mm-hmm. the majority of the community is very behind this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge majority of support. So. Mm-hmm.
Right. And some of the, you know, the instances that you declared, the, you know, economic mm-hmm. hardships, the mental, what has gone on in those realms that you can share with us that were compelling you to, you know, take this stand?
Well,
mental health and whatnot.
Mental health and crime. Okay, so set aside the obvious economic impacts.
Right.
But criminally, we have a catch and release system in place now because
okay.
because of the response to the virus, our jail is at limited capacity.
Wow.
I mean, we're cut in half on the beds that we can fill basically at this point. And so what happens is if someone's arrested, unless it's a very violent crime or they're repeatedly arrested, then they're going to be cited and turned back out onto the street. And of course, our crime element in town thinks this is great.
Right.
I mean, this is the perfect setup for them.
What kind of message does that send? A catch and release formula?
Exactly. And they're aware of it. I mean, the criminal element, they're fully aware of it. They're using it. You know, they think it's great. So
right.
Very harmful. Frustrating to our police department. Frustrating to us.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And then just you've got the criminal element. Just also mental wellness, you know.
Correct.
People living under the auspices of this, you know, controlling apparatus that, you know, hinders our freedoms and, you know, the element of having to wear a mask and so forth. And I understand there's people out there that have genuine concerns. They're wearing their mask. You know, they're fearful for their own health and whatnot. Maybe they're even sick. They don't want to spread it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the other side. If you have a really good immune system, you're transmitting anything, you can go about your business and breathe well. And so there's arguments on both sides of the matter. But also just it's the human interaction of us living under this, you know, system where we're feeling disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
We're feeling, you know, humans need touch. Humans need proximity. We need community. And we're really designed for the deliverables of community, interacting with one another, seeing each other's faces, congregating for churches. You know, that all has taken a toll.
Yeah. And in some cases, it's just almost cruel what's going on. I mean, you have people isolated in nursing homes, unable to see their family. You know,
right.
I've heard from people who've not been able to see grandma during the last year of her life.
Right.
I mean, that's just crushing. I know I personally experienced my father was in the hospital.
Okay.
They could wheel him outside and around, but they couldn't let us inside the hospital to visit him. So we were actually having to go to the outside window of the hospital to whisper through the screen and talk to him. It's ridiculous.
Right.
So that's not how you heal people at all. So and then I'm hearing constantly from people around town who've been so impacted financially, or their marriages have been harmed
right.
because of the financial strain. They're depressed. They're anxious. They're turning to substances to kind of dull the pain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's these numbers really aren't capturable.
Right.
But when you're hearing it constantly all over the place, that widespread, you know something's going on. And they're all talking directly that this is because of the shutdowns. I have no
right.
outlet for this. I'm being isolated. My business is being
right.
killed. My home's been broken into and robbed.
Right.
I'm seeing my kids on drugs and the drug dealers back out on the street. I mean, this is just a recipe for disaster.
It is. It's not a formula that's a lasting one for a healthy community.
No, it can't be.
And part of governing, part of policy development is taking into consideration these kind of implications and impacts.
Yes.
And personally, my opinion is I feel like we've been very arbitrary.
Very.
And, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all. In my opinion, again, I feel like you know this the extent of this disease hasn't warranted the extent of the measures
exactly
to respond the response. So it makes me delighted to see that you know you and others are taking the bold position of asserting ways to recapture our freedoms, you know. And, you know, here's at the end of the day, Carrie, the platform of freedom that we have, this formula, you know, if you want to just say, I want to wake up every morning, I want to be completely safe and insulated. And then, and the more that you seek a safe, insulated life, the less freedom you have in that space.
Exactly.
And this nation, I believe, was founded upon, you know, principles of believing and fearing in a God and realizing you have a destiny and realizing that there's risk involved in your life. And you're going to assume some risk to acquire freedoms, to acquire the benefits and the fruits.
Exactly.
Right. And that's just the American way is taking a God-fearing risk and realizing your life is in the hands of a bigger, you know, apparatus than the situation in front of you. And there's fruit, good freedom. The fruit of freedom on the backside of that. So, and for some reason, we were kind of evolving as a culture. There's a segment, I believe, of the culture that's living fearfully. And I don't think that's healthy.
No.
Because I think there's those who, if you want to live fearfully, they'll take advantage of that in ways that you end up just relinquishing your liberties.
Yep.
And that's been my concern.
Exactly. Fear makes you very easy to manipulate.
Right.
And I have never seen someone who lives in fear take the highest path for their life.
Right.
Fear always brings you to the lowest potential outcome.
Exactly.
And one of the things that I firmly believe is that God has put a package of gifts into each individual, and it's different for each person. No one's exactly the same. And part of your life's purpose is to find what gifts those are and use them to build and create. And,
right.
And you can't do that when you are oppressed and locked down.
Well, I'm going to just tell you something, and you already know this. You have over there in Baker City, just due east, the Interpretive Center.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember I've been there a few times. And one of the things as I walk away from that experience on both occasions is I remember this, the writings, the journals that the men and women, what they would detail of their experience. Look, every day it would seem these journal entries, they were thanking God that they got through the day. They had engaged in a perilous journey with guarantee of nothing and a high probability of failure.
Yes.
In a small probability and prospect of success and freedom and enterprise and opportunity. And they pursued that. You know, they would, I can't remember precisely what the journey is, 2,500 miles or 3,000 miles. And essentially they're on foot. There's snakes, there's cholera, there's, you know, the local residents that didn't want them there, you know. You know, there's all kinds of peril everywhere for them. And yet they pursued the dream and the promise amidst all of the potential harm. Mm-hmm. And we've just lost that. And, you know, so I want to see us recapture really that pioneer spirit.
I was thinking about that exact same thing the other day.
Mm-hmm. So. And for some reason, we get these accoutrements of our society. We get all these, you know, nice amenities, and we can go over to the wall and hit the thermostat, and we can have an insurance agent and an airbag and a seatbelt for everything. And there's comfort in that, and that's fine to an extent. But what I don't want to see is a prevailing psychology in our culture that we seek comfort and safety above all. And then, like you say, forsake our potential. Because our potential is on the other side of our comfort zone. That's my opinion.
Exactly.
That's
perfect. Yes.
And so really kind of we're at, I think, Carrie, and you know this, you know this better than I do, and you're taking a leading position on it. I commend you for it, where it's a battle of psychology right now.
It is.
Do you want a future with fear that guides you and directs you? Or do you want a future with hope and promise, with some risk and putting your faith in something other than a government entity that right now I perceive that they're kind of juggling science right now.
Yeah.
Because one day you can get a scientific, you know, result that will dictate this decision. I'm sorry, but Mr. Fauci has kind of been all over the board.
So has our governor.
All right. And I don't find comfort in that.
No.
I find that seems to me more subjective than objective. Okay, I don't want subjective science dictating our freedoms and our future and the parameters of our liberties. I want objectivity.
Correct. And what I've seen through this process is there is a narrative in place, and this has absolutely nothing to do with science. Any science that falls outside that narrative is being completely ignored.
Right.
So
right.
There's definitely an agenda behind this.
It's selective science.
Yeah, it is.
And if you want to be intellectually honest about that, go out and do some research, because there's channeled narratives that people are receiving.
Correct.
And I would encourage listeners to not just be subject to be showered by one channeled narrative. Okay. Go do your homework. Listen to those right now, or at least give ear in a little bit of opportunity to hear some voices that have been, I think, intentionally squelched.
Yes.
There's some very good qualified folks out there with degrees in biology and epidemiology and all kinds of the sciences that want to offer a varying opinion. And you want that, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. You know, it's common for us to say, hey, go get a second opinion. You know, if you're having heart issues or any kind of issue, that, you know, a second opinion is always a good idea. But for some reason, we're defaulting to one opinion and one only on this national narrative right now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you got me waxing eloquent. So, yeah, I think that's where we're at. Where are we at right now? Where are we going forward for Baker City, the council?
We are just continuing to roll this forward. And I'm seeing this come up on the agenda for other cities across the state. I imagine that'll continue for the next month. We'll see what we do from there. We're still not being, we're being heard, but we're not being listened to. So I'm seeing now the announcement that 70% vaccination rate is the goal.
Okay, let's talk about
okay.
that.
Back in February, I was invited to a mayor's call on Zoom with the governor,
okay.
the director of OHA, and Dr. Seidlinger, who's our state epidemiologist. So, and you have to understand, I believe Pat Allen is an economist. I think that's his degree. And Dr. Seidlinger, he's the gentleman with the bow tie. He is a pediatrician from Southern California, and the majority of his career is either in it's bureaucratic. He's a former assistant professor. He's also a former employee of a health department down there. So those are the background of those two gentlemen. And during that call, at that time, they were the juice of the call, actually the meat of the call, was in the chat room, okay? A lot of the mayors called in, and they weren't able to see what was happening in that chat room. They could hear what was happening verbally.
Okay.
But I was in that chat room with a few of the other mayors. And that's where everything was. And twice, they said clear back in February that not the end goal of this is an 80 to 90% vaccination rate.
Wow.
So they said that two times. I got screenshots of it.
Wow.
Yeah. And so then we went through all of this where, no, the end goal is low. Low count of beds being filled. That was the next thing. So that was a shift. It wasn't true because they've already said that the vaccination rate was the end goal.
Okay.
So it keeps shifting. And then it was, well, you know, at the end of June, I'm sure we're going to open. No. So now that's shifted again. It's the always moving goalpost is what we have.
And it feels like there's been a lot of Simon Says. And I think Oregon citizens are getting tired of playing Simon Says. Simon says you're not going to do this. Simon says you do this.
They are.
And
it's very, very arbitrary, all of it.
Yes. And to hear you talk about some of that backroom chatter and getting mm-hmm. some of that, you know.
Well, and I asked very specifically.
Hot mic information that maybe others aren't getting.
It was interesting. I asked specifically about the Stanford University study. This is a peer-reviewed Stanford University study.
What's that mean for listeners, peer-reviewed, if they don't know?
These are double checked. They are lengthy studies. They're mm-hmm. they're done by experts and then they're reviewed by experts.
Yes. Yeah.
So and this is Stanford University,
for integrity.
Which is not necessarily known for being a very a bastion of conservatism,
right?
And they brush it off. It's an outlier. They wouldn't even consider it.
Okay.
Nothing that was brought up was even considered. They were repeatedly saying, well, "We think our way is effective," and when they're asked why, give us the data.
Okay.
There's no data.
Uh-huh.
And the horrifying part of this was someone asked during that meeting, okay, where are you getting the data for the lockdowns? And the response back during that meeting, which I would love to get on a recording of, was, well, we've purchased marketing lists from credit card companies in other states. And that's the only time during all of this in the last year I've ever heard a statement like that.
Wow.
I've never heard it since, that's for sure. I know other county commissioners and other mayors have requested the same data, and now that the response across the board is we don't have it.
Interesting.
So, yeah, behind the scenes was incredibly interesting. Whenever a mayor would ask a question, he would be called argumentative. The mayor of Troutdale was completely shut down. I mean, that's just right outside Portland there. This is on the west side of the state, and he was shut down out of that conversation.
Okay.
So this tells you the amount of tenacity with which they are sticking to their narrative.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They want to run with a position.
They do.
And maintain that, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. But thank you for you and others who are, at the end of the day, you guys are volunteering your time, volunteering your utility and all of your abilities to go in and just represent well for the citizens.
Yeah, I've heard comments, she's making an awful lot of money as mayor. She's getting paid to do this. City council members, mayor, we make $150 a year.
Right.
That's where we're capped. This is a labor of love. This is, we're not getting rich off of this. There's no personal gain.
Well, regardless of what side of the fence anyone is on out there, you want stakeholders out of your community. Community. You want people who represent the profile of your community out there, you know, contributing their time and their utility.
Correct.
To do what's best for the people, the citizens, and right. Interpret the constitutional rights, the rights that we have here in the state, and interpret what is coming down from Salem. And decide, hey, is this good for my people? And I'm willing to step up and fight and take a stand. And you guys have done that, and you continue to do that, and that's commendable.
Well, we have to. I mean, we swore an oath of office. We promised that we would uphold the state constitution and the mm-hmm. U.S. Constitution.
Right.
We made that promise. I'm not going to break that promise.
Right. No, it's commendable. And as you were saying, let's keep it an open dialogue. Let's be, you know, let's look at the science. And let's involve different ideas and interpretations and make a qualified, educated decision that's best for the people.
Correct. And right now...
It doesn't seem like it's happening from Salem.
If you go up against Salem, then you're labeled a science denier, which is incredibly right. ironic, because right now the science is showing the opposite of what they're doing. So I could make the argument very clearly that they are the science deniers.
Right.
Science shows that we should be wide open at this point.
Right.
I mean, and look at states that handle this completely differently. South Dakota, Florida. I mean, they've fared much better than we have. And mm-hmm. they were open. They're not doing the shutdowns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'd like to see, just an honest interpretation yeah. of all the science.
Yeah.
And not choosing in a narrative that it fits a policy or an agenda.
And it shows that we should be open.
The agenda business. Should be freedom.
Correct.
And equal representation. And good stewardship for the current situation we're in and what's going to be happening down the road because of the decisions we're making now.
Correct.
I think there's going to be a lot of collateral damage because of the poor decisions happening now and in the future if we don't get it turned around.
Well, and that's the fear come this fall. I mean, we're heading into flu and cold season, correct? What are we going to do when that hits? Are we going to turn around and do the same stupid thing we've been doing?
Yeah. The formula right now, as you well know and have taken a position, is not a sustainable formula.
No.
It's just a glide path to, you know, disaster if we don't do something different. So, and you're pushing for a difference, and I thank you. I know there's a lot of listeners who do.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, you know, our time is just shredded by.
Wow.
And but I thank you for coming in, and just in a few moments, just as you go forward, you're going to remain in this position, remain helpful to other entities that reach out to you. And
correct.
And it's amazing the press that you've gotten and getting your message out.
Well, thank you very much for having me here.
We're honored to have you in.
So. I appreciate it very much.
Okay. Well, best of luck. Godspeed. And thank you for coming in. We'll see you on the next go around.
All right. Thanks.
All right, folks. That was Carrie McQuiston, mayor of Baker City. And we're going to send you back to typical programming. Have a fantastic day. Thanks for joining us. Mm-hmm.